and you're on the front porch. This week, we're going to talk about the bankruptcy of the Charleston Gazette-Mail and what it means for sustained outrage in West Virginia. We'll also talk about noodling. Noodling?
Yes, noodling, Scott. It's the big deal at the legislature these days.
The most important issue at the legislature right now, noodling. That's Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
We have Jesse Troyan with the Free Market Cardinal Institute here in Charleston. Hey.
Hey, Scott.
I am not unbiased when it comes to the bankruptcy of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. I worked there for 7 years as a reporter. Many people that I know and care about are still working there. It was announced this week that it was declaring bankruptcy and that it would be sold probably within the next couple of months. They have a lot of different suitors. Right now, the leading bidder is a chain called the Ogden Newspapers, which is based in Wheeling, West Virginia, and owns several papers both in West Virginia and nationally. That's the Nutting family that also owns the Pittsburgh Pirates. But, you know, there's a possibility they could be outbid. Rick, what's your reaction to the bankruptcy?
My analogy for the Gazette is on our farm, we used to have a great Pyrenees dog who kept away the predators. And after he died, we started losing turkeys and chickens and things like that because there wasn't anything there to keep them away. And I wonder if we lose that spotlight, that vigilance that the Gazette has supplied all these years.
You know, we talk about sustained outrage, and what is that? Well, it was a phrase that was coined by the former publisher of the Gazette Mail, Ned Chilton. The idea is that if there's an issue that needs to be spotlighted, it's not enough just to do sort of a shallow drive-by report on it. You have to basically go deep and often and make sure people really understand what's going on. Jim Haught is a longtime editor at the Charleston Gazette-Mail.
And he's immortal.
Yeah. He's been working there since, I kid you not, 1951. And he did a great column the other day reminding us of all of the different scandals and corruption that the Gazette has uncovered over the years, including not one but two different governors. Their reporting helped to send to jail, to prison, and all sorts of little guy stuff. One of my favorites is the system by which lawyers were basically making money off of dead people. I've said it before, in state government, a lot of times when they're talking about some controversial thing that they're doing or some issue that they're mulling, someone in the room says, well, how would that look if it ended up in the Charleston Gazette? What would that look like on the front page of the Charleston Gazette?
Well, here's a concrete story, and this was a long time ago, but there was an African-American woman in a southern West Virginia county who was brutalized by a deputy sheriff on a bogus drug raid. The local paper wouldn't provide any coverage at all for this, but the Gazette did, and that ultimately shined a light and helped get justice and helped make changes in that area.
You know, on the other hand, a lot of people have complained that this crusading newspaper also has not always been fair to all sides, especially conservatives, different industries, especially the coal industry. And there's even been a little bit of celebration by some people in those camps that the ownership of the Charleston Gazette-Mail will be changing. So, Jesse, what's your reaction to all this?
Well, I think that there is a fair shot to be made that some of the reporters at the Gazette don't necessarily give a objective reporting stance on some of the stories that they're doing. They're allowing opinions to bleed into their reporting, or they have very well-known sort of side blogs associated with the newspaper that then they will feature their writing and their opinions through that outlet and then turn around very quickly and publish, you know, a reported piece and say, and it undermines their credibility that they're not able to very convincingly sell the fact that they're doing objective investigative reporting when they're just as well known for their opinion outlets.
You know, one last thing that has to be said, it's just the height of irony that the Charleston Gazette-Mail won the Pulitzer Prize this year based on the reporting of Eric Ayer uncovering just the flood of prescription opioids that have come into small towns, especially in southern West Virginia. He just had another story about all the millions and millions of pills that flooded Williamson, West Virginia over the years that have really shaped the national discourse on this. His stories are being discussed in the halls of Congress. I would hate to lose that. And the hope is that under new management and the ownership, we won't.
Also, if I could, Scott, the Gazette opens its editorial page. I have to say that. I mean, I've been writing for them off and on for 30 years, but it has opened its opinion pages to a lot of different voices and continues to do so. And if that closes down, That would be another loss.
For a long time, we had the Charleston Gazette and the Charleston Daily Mail, which were independent newspapers that had a shared operating agreement. And when the Charleston Gazette bought the Daily Mail, to their credit, I think, they kept the Daily Mail editorial page and made sure that they had liberal and conservative views, just like the Front Porch tries to do, you know? Underlying all this, there's lots of reasons why this is happening, but the grinding truth is the newspaper industry and the financial model nationwide has been under attack. It will be a shame for the state if we lose the largest newsroom in the state of West Virginia. Right now, there are 50-plus reporters at the Charleston Gazette and other people in their newsroom. That compares to 8 people here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. A lot of the stories that you hear and see on local TV news or on our air, they originated at the Charleston Gazette. Then we talk about them on the show, or they end up as an AP story rewritten. The whole news ecosystem is based on having lots of reporters with deep knowledge of their subject area. And as that goes away, I think we're all poorer for it.
Well, if I could offer a little bit of sort of the business, the economic perspective of what's going on here with the Gazette, I think that you point out that they have 50 reporters in the newsroom. That's a big financial burden in a small state. And as I understand it, the Chilton family, that is their sole newspaper. Whereas you look at Ogden, that has a number of papers, not just in West Virginia, but spread out throughout the country. And they're able to diversify that asset, whereas there's been sort of a sustained crunch in the West Virginia economy and the Charleston economy and in the news economy, that on some level we shouldn't be terribly surprised that this has come to be, despite it being unfortunate.
In the community newspaper, we had this really interesting commercial for-profit institution that made so much money because it was a lot of times it was a monopoly, that they were able to do all of these community services that people didn't even realize that were not all that profitable, frankly. Covering a lot of these investigative stories, it's not necessarily a profit center, but the paper did it as a community service, and their classified ads and their subscriptions and everything else, they were so profitable that they were able to subsidize the other parts of the organization. And now what we're realizing is that with the internet, the profit centers for these newspapers were stripped away, classified ads, want ads. And now we're realizing that, oh, when the newspaper declines, we lose those community services that we all took for granted. And I think the challenge is now to not take it for granted, to subscribe to your local newspaper, one. And two, institutions like public broadcasting need to work with newspapers and nonprofits and others to make sure that even if the newspaper can't do it alone anymore, maybe we can all come together and support something like investigative reporting. Maybe we can all come together and do in-depth public policy work. We're going to have to be creative, and we're going to have to see this not just as a for-profit model, but as maybe a combination for profits working with nonprofits to be able to continue doing what newspapers do. Okay, noodling. What's noodling?
There's a lot of stuff that may or may not be happening at the Capitol this week, and there's even talk of a teacher strike, but Senate Bill 416 was introduced that would officially make noodling legal in the state of West Virginia, and I think it's important for us to surface this issue.
I thought noodling was already existing all over the place in West Virginia.
Well, apparently, see, my dad told me about this a long time ago, but I didn't believe him because he was a notorious liar, but noodling is the term in the parlance of our time for like sticking your arm up like hollow logs and stuff and catching catfish with your bare hands. And I'm not sure that it was ever actually forbidden in state law, but this would actually make it officially legal to noodle.
Rick, is this like the, what was on the, there was a TV show, it was Hillbilly Hand Fishing?
Yeah.
Is that it?
I think that is pretty much the deal here.
Okay.
Is this for real?
It is.
Does this really happen? Do you know a single person that actually noodles?
I have seen pictures. I mean, I told you, I didn't believe my dad when he told me about it, but there is photographic evidence of noodling. Personally, I think anyone brave enough to stick their arm up there and grab a catfish through the mouth and out the gill or the other way around is entitled to all the catfish they can noodle. But I think there's a bigger issue here, Scott, and that is linguistic.
About the word noodling. Is your hand the noodle? What's the noodle? I don't get the noodle at all.
I'm not sure what the origin of
the metaphor
is.
Or is noodle a verb of what you do?
I used to heard it called logging for catfish is the term my dad used for it. Have you heard any other ones?
I haven't heard any of that, and I feel like my West Virginia cred is just dropping steadily right now with this.
I think we do have noodlers.
All right, noodle. Find me a noodler. If you're listening right now and you noodle or know someone who noodles, not just pictures of noodles, not just rumors of noodling, but actual noodlers, I want you to send us a tweet at Radio Finn, at El Cabrero, or
at JLTroyan_WV.
So the other thing, if I may just address the elephant in the room, the linguistic issues, I mean, this could lead to somewhat of either making our language coarser or more colorful, like, excuse me, I got to go noodle my catfish, or who noodled your catfish, or, you know, I mean, it just opens up. Somebody's, boy, that's,
wait.
That person's catfish needs noodled. I mean, you know, it just opens up this whole algebraic substitution, you know.
Is this like canoodling? Noodling, canoodling, are they related?
I don't know the genealogy of the words there. We should probably bring in an etymologist from WVU or someplace. Marshall, I mean,
it's not my catfish. That makes it sound, you know, unnecessarily risque. It's a catfish. But I'm not noodling
any
my
catfish.
That's
rather like indiscriminate. I mean, should you only noodle a catfish you know? You know, or, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be following this bill closely. It's been introduced, you say?
In the Senate, yes.
Okay. This will be the roadkill bill, I think, of 2018.
It could be the Barbie bill of 2018.
It could be the Tudor's biscuit bill of 2018.
Yeah.
These are the shiny objects bills that end up making national news because they're colorful and they're hillbilly.
While everything else is being wrecked.
Of course. Of course it is.
So if you want to know the latest on noodling, listen to The Front Porch. We'll give you updates.
Totally.
All right, you've been listening to The Front Porch, unfortunately for you. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with Rick Canoodling Wilson.
Excuse me, that's noodling, Scott.
Rick Noodling Wilson, thank you for joining us from the American Friends Service Noodle. And we have Jesse Troyan of the Cardinal Noodle. This is The Front Noodle. Thanks for listening.
Awesome.
Well, we catch them in the holes and we catch them in the rocks. Catch 'em laying way down deep underneath the dock. We catch 'em in the brush and we hope they're moving slow. We catch 'em suckers with our hands, we don't need no fishing pole. Yeah, we catch 'em suckers with our hands, we don't